Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. A special hello to all of you storm-hardened coast listeners staring down Hurricane Nate along the Gulf Coast. Nate came ashore near the mouth of the Mississippi earlier this evening in southeastern Louisiana as a Category 1 and is expected to make a second landfall in Mississippi sometime overnight. This storm is very dangerous, so be safe, everyone. Let's hope we've seen the last of those Category 3 and 4s for a while. While we seek refuge in our homes from the elements, there are many families that are tormented by unusual activity inside their homes, paranormal activity. And it comes with the added stress that the spirits may be their own late family members. When that happens, understandably, people are hesitant to leave their homes on the one hand, but feel like they're out of options. If it's happened to you, what do you do? Well, there are options, and coming up next, you'll meet Amy Bruni and Adam Berry, two of America's leading paranormal investigators. They're the stars of TLC's Kindred Spirits, a reality paranormal television show now in its second season. Every episode, some panicked and tormented family with ghost problems reach out to this fearless duo, who come to their property, gather evidence, guide the spirits into the light, and restore peace to the home. You will likely recall Amy and Adam from sci-fi's groundbreaking series Ghost Hunters, which defined a new genre in supernatural storytelling on television. That's Amy Bruni and Adam Berry from Kindred Spirits in Hour One. Of course, many of us, perhaps even most of us, are tormented by something else. Pain, discomfort, disease. In hours 2, 3, and 4, the lost and found technology of Russian scientist George Lakovsky and his multiple wave oscillator. Lakovsky believed that every cell of the human body has its own frequency. Healthy cells emit a frequency radiation. And whenever a part of the body was damaged, inflamed, or ill, then the resonance of those cells became less intense. When pathogens, bacteria, microbes take over, they disrupt our healthy cells with their harmful frequency. Lakovsky wanted to construct a device that was capable of generating a field of frequencies and in a very broad spectrum. So whenever one would place a sick person or the affected body parts in this frequency spectrum, those diseased cells would recognize their own frequency, tune in, and would start resonating in their own frequency again, making the illness allegedly disappear. Lakovsky's device was used in the United States up until 1942 and in Europe for about another 15 years. It was ordered removed from U.S. hospitals that were using it shortly after Lakovsky died in 1942. He was hit by a car. Some find that a strange and cruel coincidence. Two inventors from the Northwest, Paul Babcock and Dr. Peter Lindemann, are among a growing number of alternative health seekers who have resurrected Lakovsky's once-lost machine. They're here to tell us what exactly a multiple-wave oscillator is, how it works, how they built it, and what this machine may be capable of. Is the Lakovsky device an example of the treatments themselves not curing the condition, but rather restoring the body's self-healing ability? Is it possible that by going back in time and recovering knowledge from the dustbin of history, we can discover the medicine of the future? We'll find out in the last 3 hours of the program. But first, Amy Bruni and Adam Berry from TLC's reality paranormal show, Kindred Spirits, are next. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool. Come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Why don't you stay a while? Amy Bruni has been chasing the unknown for over 20 years. Raised in a haunted house with her free-thinking family, she was never taught to fear ghosts, but only to seek out and try to understand them. After spending a decade in the health insurance industry, Bruni decided to follow her dreams and turn paranormal investigation into her livelihood. She began traveling the country to visit its most haunted places, researching the group dynamics of ghost hunting teams and lecturing on the history of paranormal investigation. Beginning in 2008, Bruni was a staple on Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters and served as the team's historical researcher for 7 seasons, during which time she met her ghost hunting partner, Adam Barry. The birth of her daughter and the importance of family have brought new value to Bruni's investigations, putting more focus on helping families trying to reach the spirits of their loved ones. Adam Barry has spent the last 10 years in investigating, researching, and exploring some of the most haunted locations in the world. While growing up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, he began a lifelong fascination with the supernatural after having a ghostly encounter that changed his entire way of thinking about life, death, and the great beyond. Barry founded his own investigation team out of Provincetown, Massachusetts in 2007 to document cases and bring answers to those experiencing strange activity in their homes. In 2010, he won Sci-Fi's reality competition show Ghost Hunters Academy, earning a coveted spot on the network's hit original series Ghost Hunters, where he met and first teamed up with his investigation partner, Amy Bruni. Amy and Adam, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I want to ask you first, Amy. You were raised in a haunted house. Tell me about these ghosts with whom you shared your childhood home. Did they make for good housemates?
I would like to say yes, but maybe not. It's funny because I think that my story is pretty familiar to a lot of paranormal investigators, because I think a lot of us started out having experiences as children. I grew up in this house. It's just a very typical 1940s bungalow in Alameda, California. And the ghosts there were very active. We had things moving all the time, doors opening and closing. I saw full-bodied apparition. We actually had a family leave in the middle of a dinner party at our house because they saw something and they never came back. this was what I was raised around.
And you were your parents, as you point out, were very sort of open to this whole idea. So you weren't, you were trained or you were taught not to fear them. But I mean, as a child, that I would imagine right. That's easier said than done.
Yeah, well, I think as kids we're so impressionable, and we look to our parents for everything. And, you know, my parents always just said that ghosts were very normal and that they were just kind of a way of life. And I still found them very interesting, and you know, that's when I started really studying spiritualism and everything. I mean, this was back in the 80s, and so I was watching shows like In Search Of and, you know, going to my local library and reading every old Hans Holzer book I could get my hands on. But my parents just always acted like it was just completely normal and fine. And so that's something that we kind of say to families we meet now is, you know, the fear level that you have is what your kids are going to have. And so it's important to just act very confident in the face of your haunting, because your kids will feel safer.
And Adam, tell me about this ghostly encounter that forever changed the trajectory of your life.
Very much similar to Amy's. I mean, my first experience I was a kid, and I woke up in the middle of the night and I heard a dog scratching on the bathroom door, and then it walking into my room, and then it got to the TV, and the TV was one of those old tube TVs, so when you turned it off, it kind of, you know, had a glow to it for a minute. And every time it got to the TV, the TV would glow, and it just repeated this over and over again. And I didn't have a dog. And
okay, you buried the lead there.
Exactly. I didn't have a dog. And I was very... for some reason, I wasn't terrified of it. I was kind of wrapped up in the experience of it. And, I went through the process, maybe my aunt was staying over the night, maybe the dog was in the house, but I didn't see a dog, and I said, I said out loud, go away, leave me alone, and it stopped, completely stopped. So I felt like I had power over it, I never felt too afraid by it, but that was the very first experience I ever had. And then I spent the rest of my formidable years, you know, thinking about ghosts and being wrapped up in what they are and how they exist. And a trip to Gettysburg when I was much older and able to comprehend my surroundings and not influenced, you know, from an imagination of a kid. You know, I wandered off into a field and after a ghost hunt by myself, and I heard gunshots and loud cannon fire, and I saw things in the woods that I could not explain. And, you know, I was old enough to know better, as they say, and I could not explain it, and I could not get it out of my mind for weeks afterwards. And so that kind of propelled me to really tackle what we're dealing with and what it is we are actually experiencing from a scientific perspective, but also from you know, a spiritual perspective. And it propelled me to create a team, and thus, I guess, long story short, where we are today.
Amy Bruni and Adam Barry are with us from Kindred Spirits. That airs Friday nights on TLC, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Friday nights at 9, 8 Central.
All right, season two. Oh, I want to ask, you grew up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Yeah.
Adam, did you ever visit Pope's Tavern?
I didn't. I Muscle Shoals, you know, it's a beautiful town, very much in the musical realm, I would say. You know, a lot of music artists come out of there.
Steve Cropper, the legends, absolutely.
Legends, exactly. But not a lot of ghosts talking, you know, especially in that region. I think, you know, church plays a big role in everyone's life. And, you know, they didn't talk about ghosts and spirits in the way that I talk about them today. So that's, you know, my parents, unlike Bruni's parents, my parents never really, I mean, they didn't say that it was a bad thing. I mean, they liked, you know, scary movies and things like that. But I think having a conversation with them or my grandmother at the time, I think it would have been, you know, thrown to the wayside.
When to either of you, but when people have a ghost problem and they approach the two of you for help, are they typically panicked, or how would you describe their state of mind or emotional mindset?
I would say by the time they're coming to us, they're kind of at their wit's end. Like they have explored every option. Usually, when we come in, they have either you know, contacted their local church, or they have had other paranormal teams come in, or they've had people come in claiming to kind of cleanse the house or cross things over, but things are still there. And so they are just kind of, they're over it. And, you know, these are usually families who it's not that they don't want to live with it, but many of them feel as though they have some sort of connection to whatever entity is in their home. And so it becomes kind of an emotional thing as well. They want to make sure they're doing the right thing. And so sometimes they're very conflicted. Sometimes they're desperate. You know, sometimes they're frantic. It just, each case is different. But I would say usually by the time we get there, they are usually pretty desperate.
And are you like the last line of defense? If you can't help them, they're putting the for sale sign in the front yard?
I can't tell you how many times that's been the case. Or, you know, we have a case later on this season where they had the house for sale, you know, before we got there. They were trying to sell it for a good 6 months, you know, because they were done. So we've got there even when it's beyond that point.
I don't know how the real estate laws work in the United States, but I think up in Canada it's on the books. If a place is haunted, even though, you know, maybe the realtor doesn't believe it or whomever, you have to disclose that. Is that the same in the United States?
Fun fact, I have a real estate license from Massachusetts.
There you go.
So I would say in Massachusetts, you don't have to tell them that someone has passed away or the house is said to be haunted unless they ask. If they ask out loud verbally to you and say, hey, any history, do you know any history of the house being haunted or anyone dying here? If you know the answer to that question, you have to answer it legally.
It's like a FOIA request. If you don't ask the right question, you don't get.
Exactly. Exactly.
Amy Bruni and Andrew Barry are with us. Adam Barry, my apologies, Adam Barry. And the show is called Kindred Spirits, and it airs Friday nights on TLC. It's not so much a ghost hunting story. You've described it as more of a ghost therapy show. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we have found over the years, you know, many people kind of subscribe to this theory that you cross things over or lead them to the light. We kind of, in our experience, have found that if we go in with a very intensive type investigation, and this includes the actual trying to communicate with these entities, doing the research to figure out who and why they're there, you know, it's not an easy process per se, but we have found if we can figure out exactly why they are there, that is usually what causes things to kind of slow down or cease altogether. The activity usually stops. And so that's kind of the idea behind it. We obviously we have to deal with the families themselves and be very respectful of their position and what they're going through. But then we also give the same respect and deal with the entities the same way. And I think that's kind of what sets us apart is, you know, we just, we encourage other investigators to do this as well, but we, as people say, ghosts are people too. And so we just really try to, as people have said, we're ghost therapists, try to talk to these ghosts as though, we are helping them. I mean, we are, but, that's really our main goal is just trying to assist them with whatever they need.
And we're not, the name, sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, yes. Just to add to it, I mean, we're not going into a house saying, hey, are you here? Can you knock and move stuff? You know, it's, hey, are you here? What do you need? How can we help you? How can we figure out why you're still here? Why are you still here? Is there a message you need to get across to someone? You know, a lot of these families, you know, Amy said they have a close connection in, to these entities, and it's true because they feel like maybe it's a loved one that has passed, but they're like, why does my grandmother push me down the stairs?
You know, that's a great question I was going to come to. For those, if it is an ancestor or, a close relative, if they cared for you in life and they loved you in life, why would they be tormenting and haunting you in death?
I mean, that's it's such a strong word. I mean, I'd say it does haunting mean the presence of a spirit just being around, or does haunting mean something that's menacing? So there's like, what is the definition? And I feel that if something is just around and there, it's not necessarily menacing, right? So the entity could be just getting their attention because they built a house. 150 years ago, or they're connected to a murder that happened down the street. Or if it happens to be a relative, they could be checking in on them. Maybe in season one, we had a case where a granddaughter was the only one that went and took care of her grandmother's tombstone. And she did it, on a weekly, monthly basis, was there all the time and cared about her. Her Nana, that's what she was called, and she had all of her Nana's pottery in her house, and her Nana happened to just be in her home as well, watching over her. And so it was a win-win situation. However, she was terrified because it was the first time that she lived alone. She didn't know, what was happening in the house, and she thought it was menacing, and it really wasn't. It was just her grandmother watching out for her. And that's comforting.
I think activity that we... to us is kind of normal day-to-day type activity. To someone who's, not dealing with this as often as we do, that seems menacing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have things like footsteps or voices or doors closing or being touched. Those are kind of, those are scary, but that's not necessarily negative or menacing type activity.
That's true. I mean, your late granny could be in the kitchen making some pecan pie because that's what she always did. But to you, you're not expecting that, so that's a haunting. She's not intending it to be that
way.
Exactly. She can't help herself.
Exactly. And so it's our job, really, to go in and find out who it is, why they're there, and to give really closure and comfort to both sides of the veil, if you will. You know, for the homeowners to understand this activity and why it's happening, and for the entities to finally be, recognized and acknowledged.
When we come back, we're heading into a break. I want to talk to you. You kicked off season two with a visit to Lizzie Borden's house. I mean, that's infamous. That's probably the most haunted. I may have a ghost in here. Someone just threw a pen across the room.
Oh.
Anyway, Lizzie Borden's house, that's got to be like in the top 10 haunted locations. And I want to ask you, you know, what led you there, given the format of the show is about, you know, helping families deal with ghosts of loved ones. We'll discuss on the other side. Amy Bruni and Adam Berry from Kindred Spirits. Here's one of my faves, Joss Stone, taking us into the break with Super Duper Love. I haven't said super duper since I was like in grade 3. Oh, well, it works. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Say hello on Twitter, at Richard Serrett, S as in Simon, Y because I love you, R-E-double-T. Hey folks, our annual Ghost to Ghost show will be Halloween night. That's Tuesday, October the 31st. So send us your best ghost story, and we just might choose you to tell it live on air. Email your name, phone number, and best ghost story to ghoststories@coasttocoastam.com. That's ghoststories@coasttocoastam.com. And if you're into ghost stories and maybe looking for someone to go trick-or-treating with, have we got a dating site for you. ParanormalDate.com helps you find a match that shares your interest in the paranormal, ghosts, life after death, UFOs, alternative science, and Bigfoot. It's free to search and send messages. There are thousands of members in your area, and ParanormalDate.com is optimized for dating on your cell phone. And they now have over 68,000 members. It's free to sign up. Use the code word George if you want to investigate further. ParanormalDate.com. Remember, you are not alone. So why did the cast of Kindred Spirits go to Lizzie Borden's house, and what did they find? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're coming to you live from Coast Toronto, Canada, affiliate talk radio AM 640. Amy Bruni and Adam Berry are with us from Kindred Spirits, Friday nights on TLC, and just kicked off season 2, I guess, last month. And I think it was the premiere or the debut episode of season 2. You went to Lizzie Borden's house in Massachusetts. So explain how that works, because the format is, you know, you're dealing with families who have ghost problems, but I mean, you weren't meeting with Lizzie Borden's descendants, were you?
No, but we would have. But no, we were actually helping an employee there who felt as though her grandparents were haunting her at the location. And she had been told by many psychic mediums who came to the Lizzie Borden house that for some reason her grandparents were there with her. And so this kind of kept going on. And finally, she asked us to come in and kind of confirm this for her.
And why is she here? Why is she there? Excuse me, Amy. Why was this woman there?
She's an employee there. Yeah, she's one of the tour guides. And so she works every day.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that. But yeah, she's one of the tour guides. And so it just kind of also brought to light this kind of interesting question of what happens to people who work every day in, you know, these notoriously haunted locations. But yeah, it was actually a very emotional, very powerful episode. And, you know, we did, of course, try to contact the Bordens while we were there, but we were almost trying to kind of enlist their help a little bit. But overall, I'd say we were the first people who investigated the Lizzie Borden house who weren't looking for the Bordens.
So, that's interesting. You tried to enlist the ghosts there, but let me just park that for a second, because I want to come back to this this woman. Was her name Sue? I think.
Yes.
And so she believed her grandparents had moved in. They sort of followed her to work one day. Is that?
Well, no, it was more like they were protecting her, because she felt that people that worked there, things would happen. People would get sick. They would have unexpected deaths. They would have accidents. She was afraid that the house or whatever was there was affecting the lives of those that worked there. And she was terrified by her experiences that she had in the house. She would not sleep there overnight. And they do night tours. And sometimes if it's really late or snowy outside, if the weather is bad, the tour guides stay in the house. Well, she wouldn't do it. She would go and sleep in her car in the middle of winter, which became a hazard for her. She was that terrified. And so, you know, these people were saying that her grandparents were in the house sort of protecting her. And we were enlisting the Bordens to be a go-between, really, because the idea is people have investigated that location for numerous years. We have an idea and a sense that the Bordens are there at some, you know, the father is there for sure, in my opinion. And so it's like, hi, Andrew Borden, can you please give a message to, you know, Sue's grandparents? If you see them, if they're here with us, you know, let them know that, you know, we just want to confirm that they're around. And that's how that's really one of the things that we did in that location.
I mean, how often does that happen when you have a family of ghosts moving in, and are they battling perhaps with other ghosts in the house?
I mean, I don't know if it's battling per se, but I think they form kind of, you know, relationships. I think they're conscious of each other and interact in a way. But I think it just depends on the circumstance. You have to think of any home where somebody's kind of the resident and somebody else moves in. It's kind of a roommate situation all of a sudden, and it just kind of depends on how they get along, you know, as humans. So that's how we look at it.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I guess I always assumed that there may be sort of different dynamics, but maybe the ghosts are living on a different sort of on different time planes. So, for example, if you have a very old house, you may have ghosts that live there. Let's say you're in England and it dates back to the 15th century. So you may have ghosts that sort of live, are repeating in that timeline, and then you may have ghosts who lived in the 18th century, but I didn't think that their paths crossed necessarily on the other side. So you've disabused me of that notion.
I mean, it's potential. There's a potential there for that to happen, or someone who never lived in that house or property but owned the land. We've seen that where, you know, they owned acres and acres of land, and they're still kind of wandering the land, because they owned all of those acres, and now there's a bunch of houses on it, and so all the entire neighborhood has, you know, similar activity. We, you know, every time we experience and see something, or learn something new, I think we're shocked by it because it changes. It continuously changes our views and opinions on what we're kind of dealing with. And with Sue's and in Sue's case at the Lizzie Borden, we did confirm, like, we never really got any response from her grandparents until she was in there with us, investigating with us. So indeed, they were following her to the location. And there was a bigger, I don't want to spoil the episode, but there's a bigger message happening, and the reason why her family was kind of gathering around her during a few, you know, months and months. There was something that was leading up to it, which everyone can watch the episode and see what the end is. But it's remarkable.
This is not your typical ghost hunting series at all. You worked with psychic Chip Coffey on this case.
Yeah, Chip is one of our dearest friends, and we're very picky about who we bring into people's homes, just because we're actually very skeptical. And so there's just certain psychic mediums that we have grown to trust, and we use them as one of many tools in our arsenal. And Chip is one of our tools, I guess. but we've brought him in a few times, and we did use him with the Lizzie Borden house, and it was great actually because he was able to shed some major light on that case for us.
Do you, either of you, both of you, hold out the possibility that there are, that these are not the spirits of the dearly departed, but that they, at least in some cases, could be some sort of a trickster entity, even a demon masquerading as, I don't know, Great Aunt Minerva?
I mean, I know I've had people come to me with that theory, and for us, just because we've done this for so long, and, you know, I think that, you know, we've just not seen any evidence of that. But I mean, I think I get it. I think people have this natural tendency to be fearful of what they don't understand, and they kind of start to put this kind of evil idea behind it. But for us, we've just not seen that. And we have seen things that have turned out to be potentially negative in nature, But for the most part, we really do feel that these are just people like us with some sort of, you know, major message they're trying to get across or something they need to get done. And so we just don't want to discount them with some theory like that.
And, you know, my favorite thing that Amy says is that they could be just grumpy ghosts. Because if you're a jerk in real life, what's to say you're not a jerk when you're dead? They could just be like, they could just be mean and mad about something, and
right,
and that could come off as negative and demonic.
Right, like you know, Crazy Uncle Tanoose from Cleveland, you know, from the old Danny Thomas show, and he's going to be just as crazy on the other side, I guess.
Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
What you know? Why stop living the dream when you're dead? Why stop living the dream?
So how difficult when you encounter a you know, the black sheep of the family or whatever, how difficult is it to get them, you know, to turn towards the light? Maybe they enjoy what they're doing. Maybe they enjoy tormenting their relatives.
I think, you know, I think it's we just do what we do best. We listen, we ask questions, we try to understand, we try to be sympathetic. We try to, you know, come at it with a knowledge of the history of the location, of who this person is. Once we get a grasp on who we think it is, we find out as much information about that person as we can so that we can approach them with a gentle, positive, you know, kind environment. And I think, you know, that does help us. It helps us find out why they're there and what they need. And again, you know, the going to the light theory is a theory. I mean, we don't ever say, okay, now thank you for your message, go to the light, because we don't know if that works. We don't know if that can actually happen, because they have intelligence. They can do what they want. They are of their own free will, you know, but in a different plane. But we find that once they deliver that message, and once we, you know, make sure the family knows what's happening and who these people are, they kind of go away on their own. Because their work is done. They've been acknowledged, and it's their time, as they say.
If you're not
really
working,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, if you're not working with a psychic, let's say Chip Coffee, how do the ghosts communicate with you? Do you like the flashlight experiment, or how does that work?
I mean, for us, flashlights are great, but that's we need a lot more than just that, and. We use a lot of, we use our digital voice recorder. We love EVPs just because you can get electronic voice phenomena, which is a very clear answer for us. Any other types of evidence we can find. But I think more than anything, we want our research to correlate with our evidence to kind of confirm things for us. And so that's really the big thing. So we'll get little bits and pieces of evidence, and then we will pair that with research and historical documents and whatever we can find. That information, you know, put together is usually what we need in order to kind of figure out who and what is there and why they are there.
Amy Bruni and Adam Berry are with Kindred Spirits on TLC Friday nights, now in their second season. EVPs, you mentioned. This would be an interesting opportunity to sort of corroborate. If, for example, you capture an EVP of somebody's grandmother, let's say, and they have a memory of their grandmother, they may even have a recording of their grandmother's voice. And then now you can compare. I mean, wouldn't that be a wonderful opportunity to sort of verify, you know, the EVP and verify life after death?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, and we've definitely, I mean, one EVP we caught in season one was the EVP of a man who was the brother of our client. And he had a mental disability, and so he was in his 30s, but he kind of operated on the level of like a 14-year-old or 13-year-old. And he had this habit of playing with race cars, and he made this very specific sound when he did it. And she didn't tell us about that. And we caught an EVP because we had laid out race cars because we had heard he liked to play with them. And we caught an EVP of him actually making this very sound. And she recognized it immediately. We didn't even tell her what we thought it was or anything. But as soon as she heard it, she knew who it was. And even did the motion of what he did while he made this sound. And so, yeah, I mean, if only we had like a video of him doing it or something, but really just her confirmation was enough for us. And that's pretty great when we can get something like that.
Right. The idea that ghosts have a consciousness, I mean, do you run into cases where what is actually being encountered is sort of one of those endless loops of, you know, every night at 12 o'clock, mm-hmm. Uncle Joe climbs the staircase and, you know, sits in his rocking chair. In other words, it's just kind of spiritual laundry. There's no consciousness there. It's just an empty envelope.
Yeah, I mean, you know, residual haunts are very common. I would say, you know, they happen, and I feel like, you know, if you experience a residual haunt, you're in the right place at the right time. And for us, you know, we spend, you know, 4 or 5 days with a family. So if they say, you know, an entity comes in this door every day at noon, even in the daytime, because people always think we investigate at night, we do it at any time of the day, we will go and wait for this entity to come into the room when they say it comes into the room. I think they do exist. You know, you hear footsteps a lot. We can hear footsteps through the house. Those could be residual. Anything that doesn't interact with us but just kind of continues on its own, you know, it's occurred, and we've caught it on tape, and we've experienced it. And it's I don't know if that's you know, an energy imprint. It's the theory of that it's just like an energy imprint of time, and it happens, and then it may never happen again, or it may happen every day or every year. It's just one of those, you know, crazy unexplainable phenomena, which is why it's called supernatural.
But how can you? What can you do about a residual haunting if there's no consciousness there? You can't talk it. You can't talk to it. You can't communicate with it. Can you?
No, and I think a lot of what we deal with actually isn't residual,
right.
Just because
right.
by the time we've gotten there, you know, these are pretty extreme hauntings, and they're very interactive, and they're definitely trying to get some sort of message across. I think with most residual type hauntings, you know, I can say we've come into a lot of these cases with very intelligent type haunts that also happen to have a residual haunt there. And we kind of just coach them on that and say, hey, you have this entity here that's not really aware of you or aware of what's going on. You know, you can try to tell it to stop or whatever, but just know that it's not harmful. And some people like to, you know, subscribe to the theory that they can cleanse that space and kind of, you know, dismiss that energy and it will leave. And I wish I could say, you know, in all my years that always works, but I keep finding people where it doesn't work. And so I don't know. I mean, everything we do is theory. And honestly, the more we do this, the less I feel like I know. but with those kinds of things, we just try to kind of educate them and let them know that, hey, you're not in any danger. It's not anything that's going to do anything crazy, but just know that it's here and kind of lingering.
And is there an opportunity for families when you're trying to rid them of, you know, the ghost of a relative? Is there an opportunity for the family to sort of get closure and say one final goodbye before they head to the light or whatever it is that happens on the other side? I mean, is that something that's a regular part of the show?
I think for us, what's huge is just that kind of moment and that epiphany, like this confirmation that, one, what they've been experiencing is valid, and two, putting kind of a name or a face to what they've been experiencing. And so that in itself is a very emotional element to the show. Yes, they talk to them, they tell them, you know, they're aware of them, they tell them thank you, or they tell them, hey, please leave, you know. But yes, and again, like, you know, it is this moment of kind of solving the case. That is our version of going to the light, per se. And that whole culmination is what kind of makes things slow down for these people. So yes, they have that moment where they say whatever they need to say, and hopefully that is enough. In some cases, not. In some cases, the activity continues because whatever's there, you know, they're not interested in leaving. They're interested in remaining a part of the family.
All right, Amy and Adam, thank you so much. Friday nights, TLC, Kindred Spirits, Amy Bruni and Adam Berry. Just a reminder, next hour, the Multiple Wave Oscillator with Paul Babcock and Dr. Peter Lindemann. Stevie Wonder, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours, here on Coast to Coast AM.